Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Hello and welcome back, and Merry Christmas,
Merry Christmas.
Happy Hanukkah, really, because it's Hanukkah right now.
Yeah, that's true. We jumped the gun on Christmas.
We did jump the gun on Christmas, but we're all excited about Christmas. Especially
and we keep Christmas in our hearts all year round, just like they tell us to in every special.
And in Overwatch, because Dave was just talking about how in Overwatch you can have people playing Christmas skins and not Christmas time, and now that's terrible.
Yeah, that is stupid.
Yeah.
That's not stupid.
But Dave doesn't understand how Overwatch works, so he's dumb.
That's also true.
You guys have fun trying to round up all those skins at Christmas time while spending all your time doing that while people are doing real holiday stuff.
Well, if my notion of hoarding loot boxes allows me to get extra Christmas loot boxes, then I will be ahead of the game.
Do you have unused loot boxes?
I do.
I do, too.
And do y'all know if this works?
No.
But you could probably like just look it up anywhere, right?
No, we'll know tonight when we go home to our PlayStations. Dave, it's like Christmas Eve. You don't know if Santa came or not until the morning comes. But you believe in your heart Santa's going to be there in the morning.
And he may or may not have given you good things. Yeah. He may give you a random stupid voice line or spray.
Yeah, this analogy's falling apart. But
since it is random, what if y'all just both randomly didn't get any of the Christmas stuff?
No, you'll get some of the Christmas stuff.
Oh. Okay.
The Christmas loot boxes come with Christmas stuff.
You know, and weirdly, I'm actually happy with the voice lines. They're fun.
I do wonder if when we start in with things like this, people are like, oh god, more of this Overwatch crap. And we're sorry about that. Dave understands how you feel.
Yeah, it's been all year long so far.
I like to believe that a lot of people out there play Overwatch.
I like to believe that too.
There's a lot of players out there.
But we have holiday hours still coming up. This week is normal. Then next week, the 24th and 31st, those are both Saturdays, we're closing at 7 p.m. And the 25th and the 1st, we will be closed all day for Christmas and New Year's, respectively. So keep that on your calendars. Let's talk news.
Yep.
Some pretty notable trailers dropped this week. One in particular I think everybody's really excited about. And of course, I'm talking about Fate of the Furious.
Yes.
I like how, I mean, we've changed names. We're no longer Fast and the Furious 8, I believe, is what it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, because Fate is spelled, though, isn't
yeah,
it? Spelled
it's Fate.
You know what? I know some people are like, oh, that's ridiculous, and they're right, it's ridiculous, but it's ridiculous in all the right ways.
Yes. Randy is not into the Fast and Furious series, but he appreciates its ridiculousness from afar.
I can appreciate what it is meant to do.
I guess the big turnaround for this trailer.
Randy, if as I said, these are essentially, they've become superhero comic movies.
Yeah.
To the point where there's like even like weird continuity flashbacks in like Fast Five or whatever. Yep. And it revealed that the guy who went off to seeming happiness in Fast Five actually died in Fast Two.
Fast Three. Tokyo Drift.
Yep. And then we find out they had the supervillain Jason Statham at that point, and they've got all sorts of, you know, they're just like superheroes, when they meet new characters, they have to fight them first, and then they can like induct them into their ranks, and like then, The Rock.
Yes.
And now,
Fate of the Furious.
At last, we have our Dark Phoenix story.
Yes, because in this trailer,
Vin Diesel
goes against Dom the family.
Has gone evil. He's evil, Randy.
Oh, that's amazing.
He works for Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
Oh.
Who is the big bad?
You know
and
what?
She looks.
I'd
awesome.
Go evil for Charlize Theron.
Yeah,
me too.
Whatever. Yes. We don't know why. They obviously don't say it in the trailer. Surely she's holding something over him.
Yeah.
Maybe with Paul Walker's family or something like that. And
something very, very.
But for whatever the case, the whole trailer is like, what, you know, he's turned on us. Dom's gone bad.
And it looks like insane action. You have Kurt Russell being like the CIA agent that is gathering
he's,
the
he's
team
like
together.
He was like a good guy, basically.
Yeah,
he helped him
like,
out in the previous
he's
one.
He's Nick Fury.
He was legit, yeah.
He's their Nick Fury.
You know, you're right. The comic analogy holds up.
And he gets...
And Jason Statham,
he,
by
like,
the way, they're also...
He, Rock in to get Jason Statham to their side.
Right. He goes into jail, so there's going to be some prison sequence in it. So that he can break out Jason Statham, because they need this arch-villain from the previous one to help them.
Yes.
Like, is it like only you can take down Dom?
Well, yeah, it's like when they needed Magneto. Or X-Men needed Magneto.
Yeah, sure. That's pretty much right.
When you need Mystique or you know, some random, like...
Yep.
Villain.
And culminates in their, what can only... You know, previously they fought a plane... They had that, like,
plane.
There was an extended, like, was it like one of those
20-minute long action sequence?
What would you call those carriers? It's like a
787. No.
Yeah, but one of those troop transport planes. Yeah, yeah, it was like an extended runway. It's like a C-130 extended chase and fight and driving through and exploding apart a C-130.
They were trying to keep a C-130 on the ground by firing grappling hooks into the wings.
Right, and this was like a 20-minute sequence, as if like the landing strip was like 80 miles long.
I actually did look this up, and they actually were correct. It runs like 13 miles or something.
Does it really?
It does.
And I even, I also allow for a little bit of compression. Yeah, sure. They were jumping around between a bunch of different characters. It makes sense that they'd have to show a little bit of, extend the time a little bit just to show everybody's perspective.
You're saying that there should be some amount of realism in the Fast and the Furious
movie. There's an internal logic. Yeah. But among the, before I say what the big bad is in this, there is a sequence where, if I'm not mistaken, Nick, four cars fired grappling hooks into Dom's car.
Yes.
As if they were trying to take down an Imperial Walker. and it's grabbed it from all sides, and they're all, like, peeling away. So he's, like, stuck in the middle of this intersection, his car drifting this way and that, as if they're about
to
tear
it. Dom's ready for it.
But Dom is ready for it. His, like, the doors rip off, and then he's got, like, some kind of crazy afterburner thing, and he makes two of the cars crash into each other.
I mean, he was terrified.
By the way, if people have not seen the Onion article from a few years ago about the screenwriter of Fast Five, and it's an 8-year-old kid, I rewatched it last night. It was so funny. It's still good. Look it up. It's must-watch. Even if you like the movies, it's hilarious.
Now, I have seen the first Fast and the Furious film, and I liked it well enough,
yeah.
But I never went into any of the sequels. And at this point, honestly, I think I'd rather just have a podcast with the two of you describe the movies to me, because that's amazing.
By the way, Randy, you made a mistake in going in on the first one. I think you should do what I did. You go in on Fast Five.
Fast Five?
Fast Five is, it's, you know how, like,
you still haven't seen any of the previous
I have
ones.
Never seen any of the previous
Isn't
ones.
That like starting the Marvel Cinematic Universe with the Avengers? Although that's not a idea, actually.
It's more like, it's also like when you're a kid and you just got a random issue of Avengers and you're like, oh, they're teaming up with, the Brotherhood of Mutants to do something, and it's crazy and I don't know what's going on, but it's cool. It's more like that.
Okay. All right.
Fast Five,
I felt like
the
shotgun introduction was kind of, they had also polished their action stuff at that point. And it had moved into more of a heist series,
okay.
Like Mission Impossible with cars and stuff.
Yep.
So I actually feel like if you ever give another shot, do it with Fast Five.
Okay, fair enough.
Anyway, the big boss is a submarine. Is what I guess what I'm trying to say is
they're driving on ice. A submarine breaks through the surface,
and it's clear that some sort of perhaps prolonged engagement occurs.
I don't know how you grappling hook a submarine. That seems
like
weird.
It's like they're riding away from it, and it's like crashing, breaking up through the ice behind
them.
They
have tanks. They finally do get.
They
a tank.
They do get a tank. So yeah. Now it's not like a full tank. It's some kind of like fast moving little.
It looks like he's something from G.I. Joe. It looks
it
like
does.
A hiss.
It actually it does. It looks like yeah. Anyway, suffice to say, this movie is going to be... when I reposted on Facebook, I said it looked stupid even by their standards, and it does. But
still
stupid fun, probably. Yeah.
You mean that in a loving way.
I mean in a loving way.
You mean like when you toss little kids and you're like, you're so stupid.
Yeah, exactly. Because we do that all the time.
Yeah, all the time.
Actually, I have a little concern. I feel like it could potentially veer too far into the to meathead dumb guy territory. Yep. So I'm not putting all my money on it yet.
So you think it could jump the shark? Have they ever jumped the shark? I don't know if they've jumped a shark.
They've never jumped a shark.
Okay, there's a submarine. I don't know what happens in these movies. So
if it does go sour, though, that's okay. Because, like, you get, like, a crap-ass run on the X-Men, and you're like, well, it'll get them back around.
Oh, the 90s.
Yeah. Actually, did I hear that they planned this to be a finite series, like 10 or 12 or something like that, is meant to be, like, a definitive finale?
I have not heard that, but that 12 movies is pretty damn good.
I don't know if it's actually meant to be that, but I feel like maybe it was, like, 10. We'll see if they stick to that, because I know these make them a bazillion dollars.
Yeah,
here's what I want to know. Where's the merchandise? Where's a video game for Fast and the Furious? Where's the comic books?
But like, it should be like a real high profile one.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that we don't know that it's not like a well-known thing is a little crazy.
Yeah, it is. I don't know.
All right. But the trailer that people are actually excited about, super excited about, is, of course, DuckTales. Because DuckTales has a new trailer this week.
Oh, I didn't see it. I think I saw a teaser.
It is a teaser. It's got the original music, and they're doing new episodes in Disney XD, which I never watched the original DuckTales, but I have a certain fondness for...
Original DuckTales is fun.
But I'm curious.
Everybody, whether you watched it or not, everybody knows the theme song.
Yep.
Everybody probably watched the opening like 5 times, even if you've never seen it, or maybe a dozen times.
Not only do you know the theme song, you have it stuck in your head, even though we haven't sung a word of
that's
it.
That's right.
I remember Sam McKellen impersonator singing the DuckTales intro song.
And I remember when it was covered awesomely by the, was it Saturday Morning Slow Jams or whatever? The guys, the same dudes who I believe are the, who does like the jazz and swing covers of pop songs?
Oh.
Postmodern Jukebox.
Postmodern Jukebox, yes.
Yeah, I believe those guys, through maybe one of their little side projects, did a cover of the opening of it. And it's like this real chill, jazzy lounge version this lady sings. And it's actually really cool, so people should look that up.
All right. Okay, I'm done with teasing our listeners. The actual trailer I'm super excited about is Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh, right.
I'd actually forgotten that that was this week. We didn't know what your stupid game plan is, Randy.
I was excited for the Fast 8.
Yeah. I don't know about your stupid car movies. But I have sat through 3 weak-ass Spider-Man movies and skipped 2 entirely. Is that the right total? Yeah, that's the right total.
So you didn't see the Andrew Garfield ones?
I did not see the second Andrew Garfield one, and I did not see the third Tobey Maguire one.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's funny, I saw the first Andrew Garfield one, but I don't even, like, remember it.
I remember there was another one of these dumb We're All In Together in New York things where he, like, swung through all the skyscrapers.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's dumb.
Yeah. I'm not sure where they kind of got the notion that that's an integral part. Did they just see the Sam Raimi one and they're like, well, we haven't read any of the comics, but I guess this is a thing. New Yorkers help out Spider-Man.
Oh my God. If Amazing Spider-Man was made because they paste it off the 3 movies and that's all they knew about Spider-Man, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, it's all falling into place.
That makes so much more sense. Yeah,
Sam Raimi has a lot to answer for that third one.
And, well, you Sam know, Raimi, 1 and 2 don't hold up as well as you remember. If you go back and look at them, they're pretty weak.
I don't know. I've seen glimpses over time and it seems like they did all right.
They are good if you look at them for the time. You're like, oh, this is the time before anyone had done superhero movies.
I don't know if I believe you on this.
But I'm right.
I think that your Marvel whoredom has you looking for that Marvel formula and any deviation from it, and you're like, oh, that's not so good.
I still never felt that Tobey Maguire was a great Peter.
Well, no, he's mopey.
Well, here's the thing. He's not exactly what people wanted, but then again, Michael Keaton was, you could say he's not a great Batman because his Bruce and his Batman, though, you know full well that they are not like the traditional comic version.
I love his Bruce Wayne.
You can love it, but you know full well it's not like the traditional comic
version. He's actually right. The Christopher Nolan's Batman is closer to Bruce Wayne than the one that Keaton did, even though it's boring.
Where he was drunk and grabbed those 2 women and dropped them into like the water fountain of the hotel.
That actually feels more like Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, that does.
It's boring,
yeah.
But it feels more like Bruce Wayne.
He was still doing it as like an act, right?
Yeah.
But anyway,
I liked him sneaking behind Knox and, making jokes.
At any rate, I have not liked Spider-Man for the most part in the movies. I've wanted to like it way more than I did. For one thing, I wanted quipping.
Yeah,
and
for whatever reason, I mean, I guess they must have. They did do some more of it in the Andrew Garfield one.
For another thing, I want to just see him in high school. Yeah. They do it for like 5 minutes, and the kid is 22, and it doesn't make any sense. He's in high school, so
right now they actually got a kid who looks like a kid. Everybody likes this kid because they saw him in Civil War,
which I just rewatched the other night and remembered he's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then they did this trailer out and it's everything I want. They open with that bank robbery thing where the guys are there robbing the place and they cut back and Spidey's just standing there watching them before he starts talking. And then he's quipping the whole time.
Yep.
I was so happy. And then they go to the high school stuff.
Also, they clearly have – he's as established in Civil War, he's got a repartee with Iron Man.
Yeah.
Where Tony gets to be his smart-ass self with him.
Yeah.
And they play off of each other well.
They showed Spider-Man and Iron Man as Spidey's swinging and Iron Man's flying next to him.
Yep.
That's all I want, honestly.
It's a little, you know, that was a little weird for me to like, wow, your Spider-Man movie is like has this almost like team-up element in it.
I'm good with that.
But, like, I sure don't want like another origin story,
nope.
You know.
If they could not do any origin story in this movie, I'd be very happy.
Yep. Oh, and I think Michael Keaton as the Vulture is going to be awesome.
Yes.
He only got a line in the trailer, but he sounded like they were playing him up as... Well, not quite like this, but you know how Philip Seymour Hoffman in Mission Impossible, even in the trailers, you're like, oh, he actually sounds pretty unnerving.
Yeah.
Michael Keaton sounds like he's a little bit unnerving in this one, like could be unnervingly creepy.
And I like the look of it. I like the mask, actually.
Yeah. Well, he's also got sort of like this bomber jacket. It kind of makes sense for like a Vulture.
Yeah.
You mean outside of the big old armor contraption thing we see?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where, what he's wearing.
I don't think I particularly noticed it.
The flight jacket and the fur that is actually the flight jacket.
Yeah. It's got the fur.
That's funny.
The
fur.
Yeah. So, I love the look. They did the wings for Spidey, which actually looks like he's using to glide, which is kind of cool.
Right. For people who might not know about it, those little web wing things that he's got are an old school tradition that he generally has gone sometimes decades without, I think. But goes back to the original Steve Ditko Spider-Man design.
And then there's his buddy, who everybody thought was Genki from Miles Morales, which, by the way, I clearly have never done Miles Morales. All my friends were talking about Genki, and I have no idea who that is.
Yeah.
But it is not. I've heard that it is actually one of his other buddies.
Well, it's an update on Ned Leeds.
Ned Leeds.
They're
that's
naming him Ned Leeds, even though he does not seem to bear any relation to him. But I think they're like, enough with the Harry Osborn as pal. Let's bring something new into it. Ned Leeds was a character prominently in the 80s.
But he was not in high school. He was the Bugle.
Was that the deal? Yeah.
Yeah, Ned Leeds was like the older guy.
He was
a
co-worker,
Well, he was the older guy who was dating, what's her name? Betty Brandt?
Maybe so.
Yeah,
so. I forget what the deal was.
And he turned out to be a Hobgoblin and then not the Hobgoblin.
Right.
And the Hobgoblin
people,
again.
But at the time, he was just like essentially a co-worker for Peter kind of a buddy.
Yeah, this is, I mean, this guy is Harry Osborn. They just don't want to use the Harry Osborn name again.
Right.
Or he's Genki, but they don't use the Genki name. Whatever.
Think that, I think it's that.
He looks interesting enough. I like that they're going to do the thing where he doesn't do so great with the secret identity. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
It's funny, I used to be really mad about Bendis not getting secret identities, but now I'm kind of on board this whole thing of maybe they're kind of dumb.
Yeah, we've all seen how awesome, say, the general supporting cast is in a TV show like The Flash.
Yep.
And how kind of grating it is when they hold out on somebody like Iris.
Yeah.
So, I'm like, it only seems to be, like, artificial pain and when it's so relieving when they tell friends and stuff.
I'm still going to need some bigger reason for why you can't tell Aunt May, because there's no good reason.
Hell, maybe he does.
I don't think so.
It's funny, Stan Lee, this is, like, the tropiest of trope things now, but it was just, like, because she had a weak heart, right?
Back that's not going to work so much for the young Aunt May.
No.
But I think it's a she won't let me do this kind of thing, which makes sense.
I could see that. It would just be, you're just kind of like forbidden by the adult in your life.
She won't be dumb, though. Her nephew is running around with Tony Stark. I mean, it's not like a, oh, yeah, he's not Iron Man. No, wait a minute, he is.
Yeah, I'll be curious. If she does puzzle that out or whatever, I'll be curious to see how it is she either decides to, it's okay, or says it's not okay and he does it anyway, or, you know, how it plays out.
The only thing I liked about this, which, you know, it's only a trailer, at no point does he take his mask off in front of 100 people in New York.
Randy, I thought you were okay with the identity being loose.
Not so much that part. I get that you have a star and you want to see his face, but maybe when he's Spider-Man, let him be Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's funny. I believe that is purely a like a producer kind of thing. They're like, oh, we paid for whoever the actor is. We got to show their face. I think the fans, if they're hearing the voice.
Yeah, we're good.
And you see them in a few scenes when they're not doing superhero stuff. They're not thinking like, I didn't get my Robert Downey fix or whatever.
Well, to be mean, I'm like, well, Tom Holland's not that big of a name.
right. But they do usually want to show them because they want them to become, I think, associated with
and
the...
And I think we'll get those scenes.
Well, I think Marvel's found a good balance. I think they've done a really good job of balancing. Like I said, just rewatched Civil War, and they give us everybody's face out of costume in context, and then when they're in costume, they're in costume.
Right.
So, I know I'm a total Marvel whore, but I think they have found the perfect blend to do it, and everyone should follow their model exactly.
I feel like Sony just said, give Marvel the, make us a movie.
That is a smart idea. DC should do the same thing.
You know, one of the clever things they did in Civil War is, like, for instance, who played Black Panther?
Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah. And, you know, he got a fair amount of time just as T'Challa.
Yeah, he did.
First. And so, and everybody was like, oh, he's dreamy. We love him. And then he puts on the costume and he's in the costume most of the rest of the movie.
Yep.
But he looks supremely cool in the costume.
Yep.
So you got to make sure your costume is cool.
Yep.
By the way, I did think the Vulture's costume, I got to be sold on it.
I like the Vulture's costume.
It's a little too mecha.
I can see that. But I was pretty happy with it. And I think they've got a track record I'm willing to trust. At any rate, my overall message here is, everyone who has superheroes should let Marvel Studios make their movie until they prove otherwise.
Interesting. Why they should put you on the payroll there.
Yep. Okay. Non-movie news. R.L. Stein is writing Man-Thing for Marvel.
Yeah.
In other news I never expected to be saying.
You might remember R.L. Stein from the 1990s, which he controlled completely through his Goosebumps empire.
Or from the Goosebumps movie that just came out.
Jack Black played
R.L. Stein. Yeah.
What if Jack Black is writing Man-Thing and he's taken over his identity?
It's an interesting notion. Foolish, perhaps.
I think this is perfect.
Yeah, I do
think
too.
It could be good. I kind of in the 90s thought, looked down perhaps on R.L. Stein as being kind of like a schlocky kids author who just like basically created a franchise and was just churning it out.
Sounds like Hipster Dave is in the house.
You know, there were covers of that had like weird prismatic hologram things and it's kind
You're
of...
Right, I hate it too.
Yeah.
It was the era.
But, I know, like, it was, like, you know, an introduction to reading for a zillion kids and, you know, got them into horror and stuff like that. And when I read some of the comic book adaptations that they did about 10 years back, I was like, okay, you know, there's actually some good craft here. And it was good spooky stories for kids that walk a nice line between spooky and not, like, super creepy. And so I'm sort of rooting for him. I feel like Stein is not a horrible
you hope
monster.
You hope this kid can maybe make it.
Yes. Got to be honest. Man, Thing's a weird one.
I was gonna say, I'll be interested to hear sort of the pitch of what the hook is for Man
Thing. Is weird because he's always meant to be almost this like force of nature. I mean, he is like a force of
he
nature.
He doesn't talk.
Right. He is an embodiment of...
He basically...
What is he an embodiment of? The nexus of all reality.
Yeah, he's like a guardian.
But what is he supposed to... He's drawn to things with fear, and they burn when he touches them.
Yep. Yeah.
Super weird idea. Generally, heroes don't set things on fire.
Yep.
And usually it's not just things that are scared of it, which is also horrible.
I mean, Johnny Storm is looking at you and like... I burn shit.
Yeah.
But not because it's afraid of him. No. That would mostly make him a psychopath.
Mostly he puts flame circles around things and then burns alien ships.
That's true. Yep. Yep. Man Thing just comes up and lights people on fire with his touch.
Yeah, he grabs them and you're on fire.
Yep.
Ghost Rider burns it too.
That's still spectral flame.
Yep. Yeah,
Man
it is.
Thing is flame flame.
It is a little weird that you are a crazy plant looking terrifying dude and things that are afraid of you burn at your touch. That's literally everything.
Yeah.
Everything. Like, no matter what, if you see Man Thing, you're gonna piss your pants and then catch on fire.
Right. Even if I had heard that he helps people, if I saw him, I would be afraid and then I would be on fire.
And then he'd be on fire.
I mean, he has to touch you though, right?
Or do
you
know he would.
Yeah, Man Thing will touch you.
He's gonna recognize that I'm afraid and he's gonna put his swampy paw on me.
That's right.
Anyway, I am...
Would Daredevil be afraid?
Daredevil's a man without fear.
He's the man without fear.
They did this joke before in one of those old Marvel calendars. Remember when they had like that Marvel magazine, Marvel Age, was it?
Yep.
And it had like a calendar in each issue with like Fred Hembeck and other their cartoony artists of the era would draw little spot jokes in there. And one of them was like, you know, the anniversary of the Man Thing or whatever. And I remember there was a all who know fear burns at the Man Thing's touch. And Daredevil is like standing there. It's touching him. He's smiling. And he's just like, ha.
But you know why Daredevil's not afraid? He can't see him. That's why Daredevil's not afraid of anything. He can't see.
What do you think would happen if somebody said, Daredevil, it's like an 8-foot muck monster?
He would freak out and then he'd catch fire.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I guess the point is, we all have an interest in this, although we don't know how he's going to pull it off. Actually, I imagine, you know, he's good with something I've kind of picked up. He's good at sort of sketching out characters quickly and making sort of likable, relatable characters very fast. You know, kind of like kid Stephen King.
Yeah. He may create a bunch of kid characters in the Florida Everglades who run into the Man Thing and catch fire. Yes.
Finds them.
Is that how he ends every issue?
Yes.
You know what?
Every issue we meet a kid, he gives us a story, he goes into the swamp, he catches fire.
You know, it's weird. I could see him actually running with a little bit of a Goosebumps approach where some kid or something becomes, like, bonded to Man-Thing.
Right? Yeah.
And it protects him. Or the kid has visions that lead Man-Thing somewhere so he can burn stuff. You know? Anyway, we'll see.
In other weird comic book news, they're doing a series of DC and Hanna-Barbera annuals.
Right. DC, of course, having famously recently done 4 big revamps of Johnny Quest and Friends, Scooby-Doo,
Flintstones, and Wacky Raceland.
And Wacky Raceland, and now I think those have generally, they're not like huge hits, but they've been doing pretty well for them.
They're buzzy.
And I've liked most of them. And so now they're going to, like, you said, is it annuals?
It's a series of annuals, yes.
So for instance, like, Superman will meet the Wacky Racers.
I don't know.
You know what? What did I see?
I assume he would meet Space Ghost.
I did see some. I think they did show that. Or maybe the Green Lanterns met Space Ghost.
Adam Strange is meeting up with the Future Quest guys.
Okay.
And they're going back to the cool Carlos. Who's the artist?
Carlos Pacheco?
Not Carlos Pacheco. Who did the Adam Strange miniseries?
Pascal Ferry.
They're going back to the cool Pascal Ferry and not the super lame New 52 Adam Strange costume.
Oh, that's good because Pascal Ferry came up with an amazing costume that should never be touched.
And the New 52 was terrible.
Who was it who's teaming up with Fred Flintstone? I saw it.
I don't know. I should look this up.
Okay.
All right.
Fred Flintstone teams up with.
You guys vamp for a second.
Lobo.
I'll find it. Talk more about how Man Thing burns things.
So a prehistoric dude or what? But
it's not like Anthro, is it?
No,
because that'd be amazing.
It's somebody that people actually know.
Flintstones meet Commandy.
That'd be weird because Commandy are far future, and Flintstones. What if Flintstones? What happens after Commandy?
Whoa!
But people know who Commandy is either.
So by the way, just in general though, I'm looking forward to this. I think it'll be fun. I feel like you could take almost any character that's like a cool and drop them in and have fun with these.
Does that mean they're going to cross over with Scooby?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if they'll go to, like, his dark future or, like, Scooby-Doo. It'll be, like, the characters just pre...
because they've already done, like, Scooby-Doo Team-Up as a regular book. It's, like, kids first, so it's got to be the apocalyptic one, right?
Right. I'm just saying, like, those characters existed before the apocalypse, like, in that first issue. And it might just be that they meet them in their normal investigation.
Okay.
But probably not.
Are all guesses in?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So, Green Lantern Space Ghost Annual does have Ariel Olivetti art. He's the guy who did the sort of painty
Space Ghost.
He was back. Yep. And Howard Chaykin is putting a modern spin on Rough and Ready.
I don't even know who that is.
They were the toast of nightclubs, variety shows, late night chat fests, and Broadway. Learn how they became the comedic duo of yesterday.
Howard Chaykin.
Howard Chaykin.
But wait, who are they teaming with? Or?
They seem like it's a backup story.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a modernization. Suicide Squad Banana Splits.
Right, that's the one I remember hearing about.
What are you
smoking? Now, Banana Splits, I thought that was like, I don't know, Sid Marty Croft or something.
Mistaken for metahumans and thrown into the bowels of Bell Rev Penitentiary, the Banana Splits are recruited by Amanda Waller for a secret mission. Save the Suicide Squad.
What follows is quite possibly
the weirdest team-up ever. How will Flegal, Bingo, Drooper, and Snorky stand up to Harley, Deadshot, Katana, and Killer Croc? You know, we just talked about a man thing who burns people that fear him is the most ridiculous thing in comics. Congratulations, DC. This is written by Tony Bedard, art by Ben Caldwell. Okay. Mark Russell does a backup that brings back Snagglepuss as a Southern Gothic playwright working with an ensemble cast of cultural figures exploring an intensely creative time in the New York City theater scene of the 1950s. Are we sure these are really happening? What is the date today? Is it April 1st?
I actually always thought that's the direction they could go with Snagglepuss.
I didn't see that one.
Adam Strange Future Quest is Mark Andreyko and Jeff Parker, art by Steve Lieber. The background features Top Cat. It's written by Dan DiDio, so that'll be great. Breaking out of prison is challenging enough for an anthropomorphic cat. But what happens when it means stumbling through a cosmic portal of planet Earth right into the hands of Batman? When it gets Batman beats the crap out of a Top Cat. Flintstones Booster Gold.
Oh, that's right. A time traveler.
Rick Leonardi is on art. Backup features The Jetsons by Amanda Conner and Jimmy Palmiotti.
Oh, I heard them talking about that months ago, and but they were like, we can't even say where this is appearing.
How does dying change when Grandma's brain can be digitally imprinted on a house-cleaning robot? Are we sure this is real?
Hey, so is Amanda Conner drawing this Jetsons?
That is an excellent question. No, of course not. Amanda Conner doesn't draw anymore. She just writes stuff.
Do we know this for a fact, though?
Yeah.
Oh, bummer.
Somebody else.
That's sad.
Sounds crazy, but definitely in keeping with their revamps, possibly even running further with it. But,
Suicide Squad, Banana Splits.
There is no way I'm not reading that.
Annuals are weird anyway. I'd rather them be, like, outrageous, perhaps.
I agree. I think this is what they should do with all annuals from now on.
Hey, we both liked Armageddon 2001 back in the day and some of those themed ones.
I'm just saying Armageddon 2001 would have been better if the Banana Splits were in it. Anyway, I'm very intrigued by this because it looks insane. In the same way, Fate of the Furious looks insane.
Yes.
Finally,
back to back, you would die. Your heart will detonate.
Finally, there is a sequel to Dark Crystal coming out in comic book form.
Right.
Now, is anyone here a Dark Crystal fan? I think we're all sort of...
I am. I'm a sort of love-hate with the Dark Crystal.
Okay.
And not even like in the kind of love it, kind of hate it thing. I actually sort of hate it sometimes, and I sort of love it sometimes.
It's like when he wakes up on the wrong side of the
bed. I like the world building and all that stuff. I like scenes in the movie, but I also always find it kind of like it's weirdly paced. It doesn't... I feel like the story isn't actually very strong in it, that it's like feels too much like it's... kind of random world building and myth making and stuff, but without really putting in the work of character and, and stuff. You know, everybody remembers, yeah, the Skeksis were scary and the Gelflings looked cool, and then there's George Giant Crabman, the Garthen. You know, it's a weird ass movie. I've actually liked the comics that they've done better. They're like, or is it illustrated prose? No, I think it's some illustrated prose and some comics, those little hardcovers they put out.
Okay.
I actually like those pretty well and have found them to do be stronger storytelling. So this, I think, is based off of a unfilmed sequel script. The one that was originally going to be made into a movie by Gennady Tartakovsky.
Oh, okay.
Of
yeah.
Samurai Jack and the Clone Wars, you know, the original Clone Wars cartoons. But I think, you know, I think that fell through, and so they're just doing it as a comic adaptation now, but it seems like they've got pretty good people on it.
That's
so
cool.
I'm interested to see what they're going to do.
Tartakovsky's kind of like the Russo brothers. I think he attached and Lord Miller. He seems to attach himself to 100 different things.
Yeah.
And then just follow through on whatever one actually strikes his fancy.
It's possible. Yeah. I know, like, what is he? He was doing like all those Transylvania movies, whatever the...
Really?
The CG ones.
Oh, the
Hotel Transylvania?
Yeah.
That's him?
Yep.
Oh.
I kind of heard... I heard that those were maybe not so great, though.
That's what I heard, too.
Yeah. I feel like he... But they did make a lot of money, I think.
Yeah.
Do very well for a smaller budget CG movie.
Gennady Tartakovsky out of eat.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, we'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week, and then we'll talk about our best of 2016. We're talking comics week of Wednesday, December 14th, and Nick, why don't you kick us off here?
Sure. I picked the Zero issue, so I was surprised by that. Doubly surprised at the number one of Inhumans versus X-Men. Kind of kicks a lot of ass.
Really?
Yeah, okay. It's just a fun
now you
book.
Like the Zero issue.
I loved the Zero issue, and this one sort of just compounds upon what they did in the first one. This is basically the two teams coming to blows, and instead of feeling very kind of artificial, like in some things, this feels kind of natural. It feels like what some of
an organic fight,
an organic fight of what these players would do. Like if you have on your team as two leaders of mutant kind, that is Magneto and Emma Frost, you know you're probably going to come to blows at some point.
Where's Storm in all this? I thought she was leading the Extraordinary X-Men.
She is. But they kind of vote on what they need to do after Hank McCoy sort of drops a bombshell.
Oh, okay.
And things are going to... bad things are on the horizon.
Now, let me ask you this. I know who all the X-Men are.
Yes.
If I don't know who the Inhumans are, is this going to be the X-Men fighting a bunch of people who I don't know?
I mean...
Or is the Royal Family in there at all?
Yes. No, okay. The big guns are. Medusa's okay. Here. Black Bolt's here.
Gorgon?
Karnak, Gorgon, Crystal.
Okay.
And then there are some of the lesser ones, but this is definitely given to the plus named Steve. Ones. Yes, plus Steve.
Steve's the one with no eyes, right?
I actually like how Marvel does it at the beginning of, you know, like these big ones, like Avengers versus X-Men or whatever. They give you sort of a big rundown of the people
recap.
That are involved.
Oh, okay.
So you get like a picture.
Style.
Yeah, a scoreboard style. And then,
that's cool.
Like, Human Torch is involved because he's hanging around Medusa.
Medusa's always trying to score with Crystal.
Miss Marvel makes an appearance because she's an Inhuman.
Lockjaw
is in it. So, and this is Charles Soule and Jeff Lemire. And I feel like they've really found a nice medium to work together and kind of work for both of their styles.
You know, Lockjaw and Lockheed were buddies in the Pet Avengers. I hope that gets referenced.
I would imagine it will at some
point. I imagine
it
won't.
but I was really happy with how the X-Men are represented because basically Hank calls together all of the important like leaders of the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Storm, Rogue, White Queen, Magneto, Young Beast, because he's essentially the leader of the time-traveling
That's weird. When you have a Cyclops, you don't put Beast in charge.
But is Cyclops off doing champion stuff, or is he still around?
No, he's still around.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that's not typical, but, you know, obviously things have gone in a new direction. They've been in our present day for, like, you know, a decade now.
Then Storm, Old Man Logan, and then I thought the weird one, but it makes a lot of some sense, is Forge. Forge is there.
Why is it weird? Oh, because he's not like a normal leader?
He's not like the normal leader, but he is sort of important to mutants.
He's also a little bit of an older guy. Even, you know, when he was introduced, he had been in Vietnam. I'm sure they have had to retcon that, or he's really old now.
I don't know if they've ever gone back and touched on it, to
not
be honest.
Not that I know of.
Yeah, it was kind of a notable thing. He was a mutant who was a little more comfortable with killing on occasion.
Yeah. You could transplant him to the Gulf War without much trouble.
I think he kind of did a little bit of the Tony Stark weapon design type stuff and, you know, had some of the same problems with it, too.
But there's some great infiltration stuff here. There's some sort of moving things across the board, machinations, some very Game of Thrones type things going on. So I thought this issue had a lot to give, and there's some great artwork by Lineal Francis Hugh, and I've never been, like, the hugest fan of his, but he does everything justice.
He was on that Star Wars book and he did pretty well.
Yeah.
He's one of these guys who sometimes rises to that occasion and creates really good art.
But I love seeing mutants use their powers in interesting ways. It's always been a big complaint that they just are ball blasty, and they get to use them interesting ways. There's an X-Men character that I'm not going to spoil because it's a great moment that makes a lot of sense when you're going up against Black Bolt. And I was kind of surprised and very happy about it.
Did you say what the scene was with Lockjaw?
Oh, and if you never thought you'd wanted, but seeing Phantom X take on Lockjaw.
I still don't think I want that, but I'll take your word for it.
I think what they did is they came up with a way to, because nobody is going to be happy with anybody who hurts a dog.
Yep.
I don't care what size it is.
No.
And how. And so they found a way to kind of do it that isn't like a fight.
Yeah. And, of course, Phantom X is a little annoyed.
He doesn't like to be sent out to deal with
pups. Take on a dog.
Yeah.
But
because he's a snooty European man.
But if you really think about it, Lockjaw is, like, their secret weapon. He can get you anywhere.
Yep.
Does
Lockjaw traditionally have, like, the difficulties Nightcrawler does, which is, like, you gotta have been there or seen
him? I don't think so. He basically just can teleport.
He's like a limitless Nightcrawler.
Well, he used to teleport from the moon to Earth, so.
Yeah, but I'm like, you know, he could. Maybe it's still only places he's seen. I don't know.
No, I don't think he has that problem.
No, actually, I think, he's got almost unlimited teleportation, I think.
I don't even know why we need Nightcrawler around anymore.
Yeah, you're right.
Stinky brimstone smell.
Lockjaw should eat him.
Yes.
Nightcrawler is that if you just need to go, like, 3 miles or so. Nightcrawler is the if you need to go, like, 3 miles.
And then Man-Thing should set him on fire.
No, but where I was not sure about this crossover, it's becoming something I am really looking forward
to. Excited about.
So,
You've got me interested. I'm an X-Men fan who has not read the X-Men for a while.
I love the X-Men characters, and I feel like they're given justice here.
I got a question to ask you, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, people should probably, if they missed the Zero issue, check that.
Check out the Zero issue.
Is this one of those where they need it, or is the Zero issue, like, mostly set up? I mean, it could be good setup, but
It's set up. I mean, it's basically seeing what Hank has been trying to do for the past, like, 8 months since, you know, Cyclops bit the big one, tried to stop the
Is that the one that had some sort of big revelations about what had happened to Cyclops? Or was that over in what was that?
I mean, it happened in Death of X, but it was weirdly explained better in the IVX than Zero.
Yeah, so people should probably pick up IVX Zero.
Yes, I agree. Dave, what is your pick?
My pick's an unusual one for me, as I don't think I've followed this book. I have not followed this book closely, and I decided to read an issue of The Totally Awesome Hulk.
Well, Dave, that's because you pick every issue of any comic that has Jeremy Lin in it.
That is true.
You have Linsanity.
They actually make several Jeremy Lin puns over the course of this issue. But yes, it is actually true. I decided to take a look at this issue, and I assume that part of it was a little bit of an Asian-American kind of solidarity thing. Jeremy Lin, the basketball player, guest stars in a very big way, actually. It's not just a, hey, we met him. He's like a major character in this issue, dealing with Amadeus Cho as Hulk.
Do they at any point reference those 70s ads with Dr. J and I think Larry Bird?
They do not, Randy.
Damn it.
But they do shoot hoops.
Okay, good enough.
And like, again, this is not done in a small way. It's a big thing in the issue. Now, it starts out kind of in a fun bit. Amadeus Cho's walking by, like, some, like, just basketball court in Austin, Texas, by the way.
Oh, wow.
As apparently the previous issue was set in Austin, Texas, and this is following up. Maybe Greg Pak doesn't live here.
No,
does he?
He's been here once for our store.
Yeah, but maybe he loved it so much, he's like, I got to bring this in all the time.
Maybe he loved it so much, he was like, you know, that'd be a good place for a basketball court.
That'd be a great place for the Hulk to smash. anyway, a stray ball bounces his way or something. Oh, no, I take it back. Some kids recognize him. And I thought this was kind of a cool thing. They're like, oh, man, it's Amadeus Cho. They know he's Hulk now, and they're just tripping out seeing him. And then he shoots, like, a three-pointer because you know how he's got that super calculation thing that he can do.
Yep.
And they somehow get to talking about Jeremy Lin, and he's like, look, not every Asian dude who can shoot hoops is the same guy. And then they're like, oh, crap, Jeremy Lin is literally 5 feet from us.
That's a bit of a coincidence.
It's a little bit of a coincidence. They do explain why he's there, but it's clearly it's meant to be a sort of luck-of-the-draw random coincidence.
That's a big coincidence.
Well, yes.
But you're allowed one.
He's
you're
in town
one.
For a charity thing, he said.
Sure.
And he's, and he says he heard he was out here, so he actually was seeking him out or something.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, they shoot some hoops on the court, and they end up, because they start drawing a crowd, they go back to the sort of secret base or whatever that Amadeus Cho has, where he's with the Olympus group. Which, Randy, you reminded me goes to what? Greg Pak's?
Yeah, it was Greg Pak's Incredible Hercules.
Incredible Hercules run. That's right. That's right. And it seems like Cho must be working with them. And they, like, hang out and, like, become sort of best buds. It's like, again, it's like I could almost see him as, like, a recurring character in this, at this point. Cho gets sort of roped into doing, not roped into, he like wants to. There's like a charity, how to describe it? You know how they had the super wrestlers in the 80s? This is like a charity superpower basketball game.
Sure.
Of sorts.
You know, superpower basketball makes a lot of sense because agility and speed and all that kind of thing. It makes a lot of sense.
Well, you know, the X-Men have baseball and the Avengers have, I don't know.
The Avengers have baseball too.
Do they do baseball too?
They all play baseball.
All right. Well, it looks like B-ball is on the court now.
You know, X-Men played basketball once.
Yeah, it's true. But it was like in X-Men number one or whatever with...
With Gambit and Wolverine.
Yeah, Wolverine chopped down the net because he was losing. Because he was old.
That's probably... I thought he stabbed the basketball.
I don't know. At any rate, that's probably why the X-Men don't play basketball anymore. Wolverine's a big jerk. But now that he's dead, they can play basketball again.
Gambit was about to sink the... No, he was about to sink the final shot, and he missed it because the goal had bent over because he had chopped the... propping it up. The thing.
At any rate, don't play basketball with Wolverine is the lesson.
This issue was a... And I like Greg Pak as a writer... Amadeus Cho as Hulk had not grabbed me, but there's a part of me that kind of likes the superhero super sports connection stuff. I also have fond memories of an old Marvel 2-in-1 where the Thing boxed the champion of the universe, you know, the big superpower guy. What is he? Not a guardian? He's Elder of the Universe.
Elder of the Universe.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then all the stuff, the sports ones we just talked about. So this was fun. It's also a guest walk-on that felt like a little bit more than a walk-on that I actually kind of liked. It was a surprisingly good random issue of the Hulk to read. And I recommend other people also surprisingly randomly read it. Randy?
My pick is Hawkeye number 1. I've been looking forward to this book for a while. This is Kate Spencer Hawkeye. She is out in Venice Beach, California, working as an unlicensed PI. Unlicensed PI plus Venice, California plus Hawkeye is some of my favorite things. And when you add in this really nice art from Leonardo Romero, you have a book that I... And when they were name-checking Veronica Mars in their pitch, this is pretty much kind of what I wanted it to be. And it is exactly what you'd expect from someone to say, yeah, it's going to be Hawkeye, but in Venice Beach, and it's Kate Bishop. And I say Kate Spencer, it's Kate Bishop. And it's Veronica Mars influenced. So she is working as a pretty crappy private eye. She stops a bank robbery as Hawkeye. She meets her new neighbor and her tenant. She's goofy and sort of slackery.
I noticed one thing that they did, Randy, which was, I guess, a little bit of the elephant in the room in this, mm-hmm. which is the some people are like, oh, I don't know how I feel about a replacement Hawkeye. And they kind of deal with a little bit in the sense that some people come to her investigation thing looking for Clint Barton.
In fact, like, 14 people come in looking for the real Hawkeye, 12 of them so they could punch him in the face, and 7 people come in looking for an optometrist, because Hawkeye.
Right.
And she drew an eye on her sign. It's really fun. It reminds me of everything I liked about Fractions that Hawkeye. And it has some clever visual flares that remind me of sort of the things that David Asha did. Yeah. It is definitely drawing on that book that everybody liked.
Yeah, she has almost like her, like, I'm going to call it Hawk Vision.
Yeah, Hawk Vision.
Where they've come up with this sort of iconography where she gets these little purple targets, will zero in on stuff. And it's sometimes it's clues or key things in a scene, but sometimes it's some dude's abs that she's checking out.
Yep. I thought it was really fun, and it's a little on the nose. Like, when someone pitched this book, this is pretty much exactly what I expected from it. But I cracked up at several things. I really like the visual style, and I like the character quite a bit. So, definitely recommended.
You know, a lot of people came onto the previous Matt Fraction Hawkeye. You know, it was kind of a cult book at first, and then it grew to become a pretty big success. This is since this does seem to be a good continuation of that, and, you know, a little different, but different. She was in that book too.
She was introduced in that, but no, she was introduced in Young Avengers. But
this seems like a good opportunity for people to get in on the ground floor on that shit.
Yeah, and also, I don't think you have to have read the previous Hawkeyes to enjoy this. I think this is a easy to jump on book.
Right. I did not. I still have never gotten around to reading that, and I read and enjoyed the first issue. So
my backup pick is Descender number 17, which is the start of the fourth story arc called Orbital Mechanics. It is a story that jumps between three tales of our Tim robots, Tim's foster brother Andy, now a robot scrapper whose girlfriend is a cybernetic leader of a resistance movement, and Officer Telsa and the Dr. Kwan escaping a robot prison. And basically it jumps between those three and starting to set up the story that the last story arc was all focused on sort of backstory of all these characters, and now that we know them all a little better, it's time for them to bring the band back together and escape their various trials and tribulations. So,
I feel like escaping a robot prison is the kind of thing that could be pretty awesome in Descender. I have not read this issue
yet. It's pretty awesome. It looks great. I continue to love this book. Dave, what's your backup?
Backup pick is another somewhat random pick. I was just I was enjoying some odds and ends Marvel stuff this week. It's an issue of Guardians of the Galaxy. Like Totally Awesome Hulk, it does start a new storyline. This is issue 15 of Guardians of the Galaxy. It is, let's be honest, it's a cheater story about the Thing. And even in, like, a sort of prequel to his use in, Infamous Iron Man?
Yeah.
Yeah, where, if you read that issue of Infamous Iron Man, he went and he kind of, like, strong-armed the guys at, like, the Latverian embassy trying to find out what's happening with Dr. Doom, what's this about him supposedly going straight, all that.
Right.
Well, this kind of sets up why that happened, why he was particularly on the trail of him. But beyond that, it's kind of a day-in-the-life issue of Ben Grimm, a little bit down on his luck. Basically, the Guardians, I forget what had just happened, but it's like their ship got blown up.
They showed up in Civil War II, and I think their ship got destroyed.
Yeah. It happens.
And so he's on Earth, and
there's no one on Earth, Marvel Earth, that could build a spaceship. So
now I'm trying to think. Did they say in this, Nick, why he didn't go to, like, hang out with, like, Reed and Sue? Are they off planet? Or
Reed and Sue are being cosmic gods, creating universes. They're fine. They're not nowhere
okay.
near.
That's what happened at the end of Secret Wars.
Yep. You know what's interesting is so Brian Bendis is writing this, and it begins with him. The Thing is like literally like. His Guardian's suit is all torn up, and he, like, goes into, like, a Big and Tall store to get a suit. And there's a scene I like there where
he's
the
proprietor.
He's proprietor.
Wilson.
Yeah. He clearly knows the Thing and has served him before, and the Thing kind of sheepishly tells him, he's like, you know, I don't have any money or anything right now, and I can pay you back later. And the guy's like, nah, he's like, you don't have to do that. This is one of those scenes that I think Bendis does well. The guy shows him a picture of his granddaughter. She's wearing, like, a little Fantastic Four t-shirt and stuff like that. And he says, you know, he's like, she's never been eaten by some giant god from space. She's never been, hurt in any way. And he's like, and I know that's because of guys like you. And so he's like, when I say you don't have to worry about it, you never have to worry about it.
And he's like, oh, I'll take another one.
But no, it's a sweet scene.
Yes.
It's a nice scene. There's sort of more of that, you know, this is a bit of a day in the life. He's going out and grabbing some food, and while he's doing that, he runs into Maria Hill, which is where we get a little bit of intrigue going on with her, and Dr. Doom. And, the thing is, there's a line in here that made me laugh out loud that I don't want to reveal. It's a kind of a meta joke, but it was funny. But he also is well aware. He's like, hey, you know, this Dr. Doom stuff, are you just trying to play me? Is this something where you're trying to recruit Dr. Doom and you need me to, like, you know, bring him in for you just so you can use him in some secret war or something like that? And she's like, no, no. And she explains it all and in an interesting way. But I appreciated his kind of awareness of the fact that these kind of things are often setups.
Yeah.
And then there's among other things, there's also a fun scene with MJ in it. That is a Mary Jane from... often the Spider-Man, but in more recently, Iron Man. She's been like his personal assistant, sort of.
I'm sure she has, but is Mary Jane? Oh, I guess that she and Peter used to go to like family dinners at Fantastic Four during Hickman's.
No, he actually runs into her because he's looking up what.
I know, but there's even a reference.
Do they reference her knowing him?
Because of what?
Because Peter Johnny. Did. Oh well, Johnny tried to date her back in the day, and she's like, "Oh, I used to be a model." Some people,
yeah, they reference that, but. Ben says, you look really familiar. Do I know you from somewhere? And it's like the whole, from what Peter, you know, changed reality or whatever.
Ah, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I know he was in Guardians of the Galaxy, and so it, you know, every team book sometimes zeroes in on a single character for a little bit. Because the thing is, I guess he doesn't have his own book right now. So no, it's
the Fantastic Four book hit a bit of a snag in that one of the heads of Marvel hates it.
Right. but it's, while I find it a little bit of a cheat, Bendis does this kind of all the time when he's writing a few books to... You know,
here's the thing. I was thinking about this. I don't know if it's going to be too wild if this is the grounded story, if every issue one of the Guardians gets their own, like, little...
Do we think that's what they're doing?
I mean, it's possible.
Well, here's the other thing.
Because I know Peter Quill's going to be, like, running a restaurant or
every
something.
Every other Guardian's getting their own ongoing book.
Yeah.
Gamora, Rocket, Star-Lord, Drax. Drax still has a book. I think Drax's book is over. So, like, they're all getting a book. So this is the thing's issue. That's fine. Right. It's a little weird to start a story with that.
Well, it's because I know that Bendis likes to, when he's writing multiple books, sometimes it's like he'll cheat one of the books into the other because it's just like he needs more room for that book's story.
Yeah.
And I was like, I feel like this is almost a cheat for an infamous Iron Man. But I think the other thing is, it's clear he loves Ben Grimm. Everybody should. Ben Grimm is like the greatest character of all in Marvel.
Yep, Ben Grimm's
better than
great.
Spider-Man, makes Spider-Man look like shit.
You know what? I hope Man-Thing set you on fire.
Not with Ben Grimm. Not with Ben Grimm backing me up.
No, Ben Grimm is afraid of him, too.
He'll clobber him. but I think he got the key stuff about the thing in this is, you know, he's kind of a... He's got the gruff but lovable thing. He's actually got a little bit of... There's some melancholy in it. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit of a lonely dude sometimes. But also kind of buddies with everybody.
Yeah.
And,
he references like the card games that he used to have.
Right. Yeah. And, MJ asks, she's like, do you know Tony Stark? And he's like, oh yeah, I play poker with him, and stuff like that.
Does anyone mention the words Aunt Petunia, Clobberin' Time, or Yancey Street Gang?
Actually, I don't think those things are...
I'm trying to remember if Aunt Petunia, like, I feel like it did, but that might've been in something else I read recently. Anyway, what I'm going to suggest, even though this is a Guardians book, is basically I'm saying if you like The Thing and just want to read a fun Thing story, go ahead and pick up Guardians of the Galaxy number 15.
All right, Nick, you're back up.
Talking about random, I randomly chose to read Deathstroke number 8. On the cover, it has Superman clobbering Deathstroke. I thought that looked like fun.
Yep.
So I read a story where... Deathstroke is indeed fighting Superman, which seems like it should be quick.
Seems like a really quick fight, like one page.
However, this new suit that Deathstroke is wearing, I guess his icon suit, I don't know, apparently has some powers that have
make
the ability to
up.
Withstand some of Superman's more powerful punches. Just kind of interesting. They actually do give a scientific way around things, which I thought was nice, and that's all I really needed. But it was interesting to see the two mentalities go at it, like Superman very sort of truth-justice, and then you have Deathstroke, which is a little bit more lethal, and but he's a hitman. He's going after a certain thing. And
did the suit come from like somebody he's working for?
Yeah,
it doesn't quite seem like something that he usually has, like that level of power suit.
No.
But I can imagine him working for some conglomerate or some government.
And it has
that
an artificial intelligence that has the voice of Wintergreen, which is weird.
That's weird.
But
a little Wintergreen AI?
Yeah, a little Wintergreen AI, which is bizarre, but I thought it was fun.
That's not any more weird than Jarvis being an AI in the Avengers movies.
But this one continued. I mean, it was a fun story.
Is it still Priest?
It's Priest. Larry Hama still doing the breakdowns.
That's so crazy.
Art by Carlo Pagnolin. I don't know. It was fun. And it was an interesting little battle.
Priest and Hama worked together back in the day, I assume, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Probably Larry Hama was like editor for him.
Or vice versa, actually.
There's something about Deathstroke using kryptonite bullets, which I thought was kind of fun.
Yeah, it's been done before as far back as, well, probably way, way back. But I remember Bloodsport. In the 80s, the deranged Vietnam vet, that was still a trope.
Yep.
But this issue makes me want to go back and read some of the Deathstroke that I fell off on to catch back up, because there is some interesting...
I imagine some people will... The notion of Deathstroke... what is it? You know, the Injustice game came up with a what seemed like a goofy way to make like normal guys able to fight super guys like Superman.
And super pills.
Super pills, basically. But... You know, they threw out a little bit of comic book pseudoscience as to why it would work, and then because we wanted it to work, it did.
Yeah,
and
it's no weirder than the Suicide Squad team up with the banana splits or Man Thing lighting kids on fire.
But yes, I imagine that just the notion of Deathstroke taking on Superman is probably going to draw some people in.
Probably so. Just a couple other
kids
things
love the Stroker
that were on my stack this week. There is a new Optimus Prime series. Which I have not read.
It's a miniseries or an ongoing?
I think it's an ongoing, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. I think you're right.
But I haven't had a chance to read it. But
I do kind of want to read it, too.
But it's Prime, so I always have to give it a shot. Then there's the new Zero issue for Red Sonja. It's just a quarter, new by Amy Chu and Carlos Gomez. It looked fun. We have both Marvel and DC holiday specials, which... The Marvel one is the Gwenpool one, which features weird things like Galactus Santa and Red Skull taking a trip down like the Christmas Carol, being...
That is Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol.
Being visited by the ghost of Hitler, which, whatever.
It's a little weird. That might be weirder than Man-Thing burning kids who are afraid of him, but weird.
You know... and then there's the DC one, which is just kind of a jam issue, features sort of like a framing story with Harley Quinn. It's a lot of fun. Then Suicide Squad, which is a prelude to the Justice League versus Suicide Squad mini that's coming up. The odd combination of Doctor Strange and the Punisher,
it's
called
weird.
Magic Bullets.
Yep.
It's a one shot.
No, mini-series. This is a miniseries.
Oh wow.
It's sort of in the vein of like the Daredevil Punisher one that they did a little while ago, except for a little stranger. The 17th issue of Uncanny Avengers, which finishes out the Hulk being revived by the Hand story. And then the third issue of Reborn, which is Mark Miller's new series.
That series is popular.
Yeah. What else is on your list, Dave?
Let's see. Richard Corbin has a new horror book out today called Shadows on the Grave. You know, if you're a Corbin fan, you probably already know about
this. That's what Corbin does. Yep.
It's macabre Corbin stuff with super cool artwork.
Yep.
There's a Street Fighter Unlimited annual, but I wanted to mention it because Dan Hibiki is on one of the covers, and they call it a Daniel. And so I felt like that alone was worth the mention. Good job, guys.
See, we're pretty easy.
Let's see. I think that's most of the stuff I've got this week. There's some new book that I have not read, written, and I don't know if this was in your stack, the Image book called Rockstars from Joe Harris. It had cool-looking art, and I don't know anything about it.
Yep.
Do you know what it's about?
Nope.
Okay, well, kids, there's a new Image book called Rockstars. It's written by Joe Harris, and has what I would say is very cool art by Megan Hutchison. Who, Nick, if I'm not mistaken earlier, I said looked a little bit like a cross between Kelly Jones and who's the guy who worked with Grant Morrison on... the one from with the toys and crap.
Sean
Murphy.
Sean Murphy.
Yeah, somewhere between Sean Murphy and Kelly Jones, which is an interesting place to be.
Well, there's Jessica Jones number 3 is this week.
Yep.
On my list, Daredevil number 14, which ends the story of the serial killer artist known as Muse.
That's a creepy
In cover. A really dark way. I was kind of surprised. Sewell is definitely going afield from what Wade was doing, and while it's really good, it maybe got a little dark for me, this issue. Mm. Power Man and Iron Fist number 11 continues to do... brings in a villain who I was really happy to see. I don't want to give it away who it is, but really good use of that villain. Batman TMNT Adventures number 2 is fun, if only for the Joker using explosive rubber chickens to intimidate Rocksteady and Bebop and the Shredder. And Batman coming through a portal, the turtles reaching their hand to the portal. He's like, it feels like a gargoyle. An angry gargoyle.
I also saw a Harley Joker flirtation bit where she's like, how about stop with the frowning and get with the clowning or something like that.
It's very fun, and it's been enjoyable so far. New Superman number 6, which continues the Starro story they've been doing. I've been really liking this book. Motor Girl number 2, that's Terry Moore's weird mechanic hallucinating ex-soldier... girl with aliens book.
Hey, Randy, just a second. Quick backtrack to New Superman.
Yep.
You said it has Starro in it?
Yeah.
I'm always curious to see, what's the take on Starro in
the
this?
The Chinese government, they're like their mysterious Ministry of Intelligence or whatever, have been developing Starro as a biological weapon, and it got loose. The rebels used it.
Okay, sounds interesting.
Then there's Black number 3, which is the alternate history in which only black people have superpowers, and it's sort of an underground matrixy thing. And then the finale of Britannia from Valiant, which is a really good finale. We really like this book. It is very different from most of Valiant's other stuff. And I don't know if they'll do more of this or not. They definitely left room to do more stories with this character.
Yeah, I forgot to grab that one to read. I would have liked to have checked that one out.
It's really good, and I was very happy to see that have a good conclusion. Also, 3 trades this week, all pretty notable. The newest volumes of Descender, Birthright, and Ms. Marvel, all of which are store favorites. Well, Ms. Marvel's my favorite, and it's favorite enough that it's elevated above store favorite for everyone. But I know we all like Descender and Birthright. All right, that's it for us. We'll be back in just a second to talk about our best of 2016. All right, it is time for our best of 2016 comics edition. Next week, we're going to talk about some of our board games and games we played this year, but we're going to go through our we've each done sort of a – kind of what we do with our comics picks. We've each picked a regular pick and a cheater pick.
Yep.
And then we'll go through other stuff.
I like what would normally be top 2 picks has become a regular and a cheater pick.
Yeah. Well, it's because it's cheating.
Yes.
We've broken up into categories that are mostly devised by my crazy head and the way I've been doing these things.
You know what, Randy, would be awesome if in the Olympics they were like, we have one gold medalist, one cheater gold medalist, and one second cheater gold medalist.
Yes, I like it.
That's by our theory. Anyway, yes.
About
6 or 8 categories, something like that.
Yeah, I'll have on my blog, if anyone's really interested, and you shouldn't be, I will have a giant list of my top 10 of all of these things and every, like, I do a rundown of everything. I make lists all year. That's my thing. But anyway.
Nick and I make lists the night before.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how we operate.
So we're going to give you some of the best of stuff. I will do my best to point you to where you can find these guys in our store. Whether it's by comics or trades that came out this year. And hopefully you guys will find some stuff that you might want to throw on the old Christmas list or pick up in the new year. Mm-hmm. Or you'll be like, oh, I already have all that because my taste is awesome, just like the guys at Rokes.
And then you suddenly realize you are Randy.
Yeah. So we're going to start with Best Writer. And I will kick this off with Nick Spencer, actually, who we had at the store a couple years back when he was doing...
Morning Glories.
Morning Glories, yes. And he still is doing Morning Glories, I think.
I think that's still going.
But honestly, it's not Morning Glories is doing it for me. It's his Marvel stuff that's really really doing it for
and
me.
Image.
I love the fix. In fact, that will be one of my picks. But Nick Spencer has also done Captain America, Sam Wilson, which are my favorite books. He wrote Astonishing Ant-Man. This year he did the Salt on Pleasant Hill crossover. And he relaunched Captain America, Steve Rogers, all of which I really like. He definitely tends toward the sort of sarcastic and a little bit almost leaning toward making fun of the heroes, but I feel like he likes all these characters.
Well, in the Captain America books, he's certainly homaging all the Grunwald area era stuff.
He seems to have some of the same touchstones that I do, and while it may not be the fairest method by which to judge a favorite writer, definitely coming from the same sort of source material and touchstones makes his books resonate for me.
Right. Is his favorite writer, not necessarily the best, although that could be for you personally, but favorite is going to have elements that might draw on your past.
Yes. Dave, who's your pick for favorite writer?
My pick was Jeff Lemire, who he's been hot stuff these last few years.
Prolific.
Oh, he did the new Thanos, Descender.
What's the one with the superheroes in the
Black Hammer for Dark Horse and Moon Knight?
I was going to say, and Moon Knight's one I need to like actually catch up on at some point. I found it interesting, but did not follow it.
It's working on IVX. He did Death of X. He did
Extraordinary X-Men at some point in there. Yeah,
he's still doing Extraordinary X-Men.
And I will say, like Extraordinary X-Men didn't resonate with me, but I still liked it when I read it. For me, it's stuff like it's a lot of his spacey stuff right now. His Descender is sort of pretty much always a winner. Y'all know we've picked it about like almost every issue for ages, to the point where I've like stopped picking it every issue just to give it a break.
Because you feel bad for the other books.
That's right. And then I thought Thanos was as strong a first issue as I've read the whole first the whole year. In fact, it may show up in a later category.
Spoilers.
Jeff Lemire is interesting because it kind of came from indie roots and still has his indie roots. He didn't betray them. He's still doing unusual side projects and stuff like that.
He's doing art on EDF? No.
By the way, I don't know if he's like Plutona, I think, also was this year.
Maybe
ended this year.
Yeah. That's right,
Plutona. So he's prolific. And for all I know, he was wrapping up Justice League United or whatever, or Unlimited or whatever. League Canada.
Wait, isn't it Jeff Lemire doing the art on After Death? I think it is.
Yeah, he is doing the art on that.
I said that, and then my brain was like, it was Matt Kent.
No.
And I was like, no, but it is Jeff Lemire.
So he's doing the art on one Image book.
And like
he's
40 books.
He's creating an Image book, Descender. He's creating a Dark Horse book. And then he did do Plutona this year too. That's a crazy amount of stuff.
Yeah, he probably does the cocaine.
Probably.
I appreciate his ability to kind of change gears. He's doing like weird superhero comics like Moon Knight, a good supervillain book in Thanos, sci-fi with Descender, and these sort of like superheroes as catalyst for other stories in Plutona and
Black Hammer.
So, yeah, the guy's actually got a pretty diverse palette. Nick, what you got?
My writer is just as prolific. I'm kind of shocked to be choosing him, but it is Mark Millar.
Mark Millar,
You cringe you say that.
I know, because of all his past stuff.
We spent a decade or so with the Ultimates
kind of
and all that stuff.
At him.
Yeah.
Just because, he always did the same kind of endings. He sort of felt like he was stuck in a rut in a lot of ways.
Right.
But I think
he was always that sort of acidic kind of like his stories had like he was always a strong craftsman. I'll say this, even when I didn't like him, he was a pretty strong craftsman. I didn't love Civil War because it seemed to like force the characters into certain roles just to make the story dramatic, even if it didn't fit them. But it was a very readable comic, and he's always had that going for him.
But I also feel like this year especially, he's sort of turned a page in a lot of ways.
Well, we know his book Huck, which I'm sure is one of the reasons why he's on your list, was a direct sort of response to the sort of cynicism of the Superman, or Batman Superman, or just Superman movie,
Man of Steel.
And so I think maybe that had him kind of deciding that maybe he was done for a little while doing them cynical comics.
But yeah, then you've got the sort of weird kind of religious fantasy that Reborn is that I've really enjoyed. And also sort of the swashbuckling sci-fi with Empress.
Yep.
And I feel like he's making fun comics.
The other thing that Miller's doing that I think that really helps is Miller was not his best working on Marvel. Because while he did do stuff that was influential on the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which, as you all know, I love, for the most part, it always felt it didn't feel right. The characters never felt right. It always felt too dark or too weird or too trying to make it real. And him doing his own books, his own characters, I don't care. I'm not as attached. So when he does something just as dark in Kingsman or even Wanted, I can respect it because it's Miller doing his thing with his own things.
What's interesting is that they do have pastiche elements, all of them.
Yeah.
You know, Superman, Empress has like sort of a Flash Gordon riff going on. Well, actually, the other one did, too, but this is not quite Flash Gordon.
He's drawing on archetypes, though, in the same way that Busiek does with Astro City.
Right.
And it's where, like I said, it doesn't feel like he's breaking the toys.
Right.
It feels like he's made his own knockoff toys, and he's playing with those instead.
Right. And usually he's got an interesting...
It's like the GoBots instead of the Transformers.
That's a really terrible thing to say about Mark Miller, and he's your pick.
It usually seems like he's got something interesting that he wants to bring to the table with it. Yes. Like, Empress is not just a sci-fi fantasy book. It's also a book about a woman getting out of a bad relationship.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's always something more to it. And Huck is one of the main reasons he's on here, because I love that.
Huck was a great series. Yeah. He also has some kind of magical hold, maybe a genie, where he gets the best artist in the industry to draw with him.
That's really true.
That hold is cha-ching.
But, I mean, Raphael Albuquerque...
Stuart Eminem,
and Reborn is
from Greg Capullo.
Greg Capullo from Batman.
Nick, you were about to say something about Huck a minute ago. Like maybe what grabbed you about it, or
no? I mean, Huck is just one of the stories that I loved. It was basically about a guy looking for his mom and sort of, or not knowing that she's
who
still
was
alive.
He? What was I forget? Like
he's kind of the Superman
was he a young
kind of,
guy.
He was. He's in the small town, but he always...
Like, is he a teenager or 20-something?
No, he's a 20-something.
He's 20-something.
Yeah. Okay.
But he's sort of simple.
Yeah.
He's simple. He wants to just help people.
Right. Not quite like Forrest Gump simple, but not too far removed from
it. A little Forrest Gump simple.
Okay.
That's a little beyond, though.
That's a little beyond, yeah.
Right.
But it was just sort of his
desire.
Which,
in a way... Well, I was going to say, in a way, you could look... I mean, Superman himself is often seen that way.
He's like Woody Harrelson simple.
On Cheers?
Woody Harrelson on Cheers, yes.
Hopefully not Woody Harrelson in Planet of the Apes 3.
Oh, that's a little...
Executing apes.
That's a little dark.
But, it seems to, like, distill Superman back to kind of a... heroic innocence, that represents him.
I've been really happy with Mark Millar this year.
Nick, who's your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is Peter Tomasi.
Okay.
So he's the guy writing Superman right now, and I think we've seen more people kind of latch on to the Superman universe these days than anyone else, than we have in quite some time.
Superman is selling better than it has in many years.
And I feel like Tomasi's bringing the same set of tools that he took that he brought with when he was doing Batman and Robin, and it's all sort of about the family stuff. And we are seeing larger than life action and him going up against villains like the Eradicator, and you know. But it's more of the inner family relationships between him and Lois and his son, and even stretching out to things like Damian and how Jonathan relates to Damian and. You know, even the animals that both families have. So it's just sort of all of the things, and he really brings that to the forefront, and I really appreciate the sort of attention to detail.
It seems like he's got a little bit more of he's interested more in the character interaction than a lot of writers I know right now.
Yeah.
There might be a little bit more plot-driven, or they kind of do with these sort of quippy characters, and I mean, you know, it's not that he's humorless, but he does seem to want to get more into the sincere character interaction.
And I feel like he gets Superman, he gets Clark, and both of those versions of the same character, because we see, you know, just in little small vignettes, like Superman saving, you know, different cities, doing on sort of his, you know, daily pass through the earth, just kind of going around helping people. And you see Clark being kind of like the dad and the newspaper guy.
You're enjoying seeing Superman kind of return to that to a rightful role.
I guess it feels very classic, and I'm appreciative of that.
Dave, who's your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is Ed Brubaker, guy who's been known to win these kind of things before.
Yep.
I feel like the book that he's most winning it for me is Kill or Be Killed, but he's prolific as well, and people this year will have seen him writing the Hollywood mystery Fade Out, as well as his spy thriller Velvet. Killer Be Killed is a I haven't finished Fade Out, so I don't know if it compares darkness wise.
It's pretty dark.
It is a pretty dark book compared to. I mean, like, you know, all of his books veer dark.
I was
going
to say, if you see a Brubaker book, no, it's going to be a little
Killer Be Killed. We've talked about a lot here. It's his exploration of vengeance through a college student who is called upon by a demon to kill people, and it explores that sort of vengeance genre. That's, you know, how you would go about it, what the moral justification could be, what would you justify it to yourself. He has complex characters who have moral failings and feel reflective of real people. It's kind of an uneasy read sometimes. You're like, oh, this is touching some dark part of me that I don't want to admit exists. But it's super compelling and also just, you know, interestingly, there's a certain procedural element to it that's kind of interesting. You know, that dark, how would you go about killing somebody?
Right.
Randy, your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is David Walker, who has done this year The Shaft, Imitation of Life, the second Shaft miniseries,
yep.
Occupy Avengers number one, the Nighthawk miniseries, and the Power Man and Iron Fist. Walker's a guy who brings a different voice to the industry.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely has brought some of the elements of sort of the African-American experience to comics in a way they haven't been here in a while.
Yep.
And he also has a writer's tool that I compare to sort of the best of what Bendis and Ellis do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Nighthawk felt very much like the kind of thing Ellis would have done. And Power Man Iron Fist feels very much like kind of what Bendis did with Power Man. But it does not feel like a knockoff of either one of them. It feels very organically something else.
Right.
And I love both of those books, and curious to see where he goes with Occupy Avengers. So that is my cheater pick. The other person who we didn't mention on Favorite Writers that's on my list is Mark Waid,
mm-hmm.
who, in addition to All New, All Different Avengers closing out this year, had Black Widow, which is great, and Champions, which is great.
Yeah, I really liked his Champions.
And special mention to Jay Willow Wilson, who writes Ms. Marvel, which I've loved every issue of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we turn now to Best Artists, and I'm going to go – my first pick is actually Greg Smallwood, who's been doing Moon Knight over with Jeff Lemire, and beautiful sort of kind of painty looking art, very much kind of moody and mystic, and I really dig it. Dave, what's your pick?
My pick is Mike Deodato, sort of a realistic artist who I tend towards the stylist a little bit more, but I feel like he does not get enough credit, and he has become a really stunning artist in the last – I mean – he's been good for a while, but I would say in the last 10 years, he's blossomed.
Yeah.
And I'm calling this out for his books like Thanos, Vader Down,
right.
Invincible Iron Man. He kind of draws it all with this, like, intensity of detail. But, like, he also reminds me of, like, say, John Buscema, where he's got that sort of Kirby dynamism to it without sacrificing his realism. He's not just a photorealistic guy. There's always an energy going on in his panels, and also, like, an amazing sense of I know his stuff looks great in black and white, so his layouts are always amazing. His likenesses are impressive. Ships are cool. I feel like this guy is, like, if all realists were as good as he was, that I wouldn't sometimes dislike the realists.
Nick, what about you?
Mine is Scotty Young for his work on I Hate Fairyland. I just love the bright, violent...
There's the opposite of realism
intensity.
Right there.
Yeah, no, it's just insane and crazy. But the visual gags are hilarious, and he just sort of has that attention to detail. Great characters.
His detail is not... in some ways, unlike, you know, Sergio Aragonés or something like that, who's both cartoony but also sort of very elaborate.
Yeah.
It's funny. Scotty Young's been around forever. He did, like, a Human Torch series and New Warriors, and his style has sort of changed as he's gone on. But I feel like when he did like, the young baby Marvels, he sort of found his footing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he brought that into his old sort of anarchic and slightly more mature reader's style for I Hate Fairyland and sort of found the book he always should have been doing.
Yeah, I agree. My backup pick is Dan Mora from Klaus.
Yeah.
Right, we've liked him a lot. We've talked about him a lot because we talked about that book a lot.
Just exquisite detailing and just sort of these beautiful, you know, medieval type... lush fantasy art that just kind of hits home. I mean...
For those of us who don't live in Europe, it's a little slice of the European tradition.
That's definitely true, yeah.
But, you know, it's gorgeous. It's like Kerry Nord when he was on Conan and things like that. Just kind of visually striking.
If you know, he makes it look beautiful when Santa's fighting somebody with a sword.
Yeah.
And he draws snow really
or
well.
Or a battle axe or whatever he had.
He draws snow really well, which is really hard.
Yeah.
Dave, backup?
My backup pick is also from a somewhat realistic school, Daniel Acuna, or Cuna, I think? Acuna.
Yeah.
Who's been drawing Captain America's Sam Wilson. And here's a weird thing to say. Like, as we've had more and more diversity in comics, I've become more and more appreciative of people who can draw, say, a wide variety of African-American characters.
Yeah.
And he's one of those guys. I love every issue that he draws of Cap Sam Wilson. I love how the characters look. Daniel Acuna is a guy who used to do these kind of ugly, what I would say is like almost computer-generated covers.
Yeah.
And I did not like them at the time. And they had a certain shiny, everything looked shiny, like their armor, their skin was looked CG, and then it wasn't literally CG, but it looked like it, like almost overly airbrushed.
I always saw the potential in him, but I liked those covers better than you did, but yeah, it was always a little clunky, and right. I feel like he's just kind of sharpened
it's
everything.
It's clear his craftsmanship was always good, but yeah. Like I think he was kind of playing to a look he thought was commercial, I think.
Yeah.
But when he started doing interiors on, I think, Uncanny Avengers a few years ago, I started really taking notice of him. And his interior art is more like traditional, like pen and ink art with a little bit of surface slickness. A little bit of that sort of CGI crispness stays the same. And he's got a – I don't know if he colors stuff as well, but I know that I was looking through there, through Cap Sam Wilson, and there was a flashback to the Falcon in his costume from the 70s.
Yep.
Which is one of the ugliest costumes you will have ever had the misfortune to see. It's
ugly
like
costume.
Red and green.
Yep.
And terrible looking, and he drew it, and it looked cool.
That's the mark of a great artist.
And it reminded me of how, like, you know, Art Adams or somebody would make, like, Wonder Man's original costume, which looked so stinky, look cool.
Yep.
And, you know, but it's also, he grounds his heroes in naturalism. I love the environments in Cap Sam Wilson, you know. His heroes can look heroic, but his backgrounds, it's going to look like New York and all the, or a S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier, and it's going to look amazing.
Yeah.
Randy, your backup pick?
My backup pick is Steve Lieber, who also is an artist who draws snow well.
He's been a genius since forever.
It's been a lot of years, but you remember him from Whiteout. But this year he did The Fix with Nick Spencer, and Steve Lieber is one of the best storytellers. I mean, I'm not going to go say the best. I can't qualify that, but he could be the best storyteller in comics.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need somebody like
it's
that to
like
do...
just like consummate pro.
You need someone like that who can do sort of a humor, dark humor book like The Fix. And so it's... always entertaining. You can his flow is great. His character designs are fantastic. This is a real world book. I mean, it's exaggerated, but there aren't costumes. It's all, you know, clothes and people. And so he can distinguish between all these different characters. The problem is, guys like Michael Lark Sean Phillips. I mean, the guys who I really like, but who sometimes all their guys look the same.
Right.
I never had that problem with Steve Lieber. All his characters are very easily identified.
Yep.
And I thought he did just career best type work on The Fix, which is saying something because that guy's had a hell of a career.
And just the visual gags that he comes up with.
Yes.
And,
right.
You know, drawing cars, animals, pretty
for
much
an illustrator
anything.
Type artist, you know, who comes from a fairly realistic school, he can be very funny.
Yep.
Yes.
There's like 10 more people on my list, but I'm not going to read them all off. Just know there's more people on my list. Okay, let's jump on.
You said
to,
you're going to post the link, right?
I'm going to post the list, yeah. Next up is Best New Series. This is defined as a series that I knew number one this year.
Correct.
So, for me, the best new series, and I've already mentioned it, is The Fix. Yeah. This is a book about corrupt cops committing crimes, deciding to get in good with a drug-sniffing dog that knows the guy is bad because he's a good dog, but he can't tell anybody because he's a dog. So it's them trying to win over this drug-sniffing dog for whatever crazy scheme they've got going. It's like it is the best of like Shane Black, dark movies with a little Tarantino thrown in there. It's outrageously sarcastic and mean, and it makes me laugh like a goon every time there's an issue. and I think it's fantastic. The first trade is $10 from Image, definitely worth a look. Dave, what about you?
My best new series is Rick Remender's Image book, Seven to Eternity, which I've sort of grown to like more with each issue. Started out, I was like, oh, I kind of like this book, even though I don't traditionally follow a lot of Remender. He tends to skew a little dark for my taste, but with a sort of a fantasy epic, it seemed, you know, that that's not an unusual approach. And even though this is particularly dark, I really liked it. What to say about it? It's a fantasy universe that's not unlike any other one. It's not grounded in elf dwarf tropes or anything like that. It's a probably the, you know, the closer inspiration might be like Stephen King's Dark Tower. And you do have like an evil overlord though. Only this guy has a particularly interesting method of control where he it's like people agree to be spies for him, and then he can like see and you know through their eyes. And it's like it's sort of like selling your soul to the devil, but it's like if by becoming a camera for him, like it's almost like you become a permanent spy for him. And it's about a sort of a small group of people who have resisted that. And it took 3 issues to get to the point of that where they're actually on sort of a quest type thing, and the heroes have gathered. Prior to that, it has been pretty relentlessly downbeat, and there's that first sort of inkling of hope in the 3rd issue. I gotta say, for a downbeat book, I really like it, and find each issue compelling. There's some badass characters that have now appeared. The villains are awesomely scary. You know, that dude, the Piper, we talked about this the other day, Nick.
Yeah.
He's up there with Darth Vader in his first appearance in Star Wars as far as, like, you see him and you're just like, shit, run. that's my pick.
My pick for best new series is a little book known as Champions.
Yep.
Which I think we've all loved.
Yeah. I mean, it's only 3 issues in, but it's the team book you can't help but love. It's great characters. It's beautiful. I mean, it's written by Mark Waid, who's the master of Marvel at this point. He's got so much greatness under his belt.
He seems to push all the right buttons for us.
He does. And he makes, you know, he gives single-issue stories with an overarching story as well. So we've gotten, you know, seeing them bickering amongst themselves, fighting random characters. It's just one of those books
that... He does do that. Each issue stands alone, but also, you know, moves the story forward and like, tells, you know,
larger and he makes arcs. Characters that you don't necessarily have a great fondness for, people like, you know, the Vision's daughter, Viv, or...
Well, I wasn't particularly into
Totally Awesome Hulk.
Yeah, the Amadeus Cho Hulk. I like Amadeus Cho as a character, hadn't loved him as the Hulk, but I like him in
but
Champions.
But he knows the right things to bring out in them.
Right.
Yeah.
And he puts that on the page, and it just instantly, like, right.
I feel like he's overtly trying to find the potential in every character.
Yeah.
And it doesn't hurt that you have Humberto Ramos drawing.
Ramos and Wade worked really well together.
Yeah. And then my backup, my cheater pick, is a book called Superman, which I've talked about just a few minutes ago. Just exactly what I want Superman to be.
Dave, your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is a cheater pick because it's really a graphic novel series. But it just released through Oni Press is the series Oh Joy Sex Toy, which has been around on the internet before this.
Yep.
But
And still is.
And why am I going to blank on the author's name?
Erica Moen,
and she does it with her husband.
Yes, whose name I'm blanking on.
Oh, not so fast now.
I lost it.
It's, you know, I had only glimpsed it as an online strip, and it is a collection of, like, you know, like 100 of the, you know, probably, maybe not 100, but say 50 of these, somewhere between 2 and 5 page stories.
Yeah.
Which, at their heart, are reviews of sex toys, just like the title tells you.
Yep.
But with an amusing, with her, she and her husband narrating, little invented characters, actually, of all different body types, genders, showing you how these things work. And there's also, so this is a super naughty comic. It's not for the youngins.
Nope.
But it is, it's very sincere and sex positive and funny. There's the little anal sex snails in
it. Yep.
that show up anytime they're talking about it. Like I couldn't get any dirtier, but none of it. But it's like,
but it's in a cute way.
In a cute way, yeah. She is almost like this little sort of magical fairy floating around, telling you stories about sex toys.
That is a perfect description of OJ's sex toys. And there are 3 volumes so far.
3 volumes. So yeah, there's lots of smut for all people.
My other cheater pick is Power Man and Iron Fist, which. This is one of those teams that we've all been wanting to get together again. After everything they've been through, I wasn't sure anybody could really bring it back to where it was. But David Walker took a pair of characters who had both moved on to some extent. One of them got married and had a kid. The other one has had numerous attempts to reinvent him. Yep. And basically put them back together and sort of meta included the notion that everybody wanted them to be a team again.
Yeah.
And then not only that, after doing a sort of intro story where they brought in some Black Mariah and some of those other characters and did sort of a good classic take on them with a new feel, then they had the challenge of dealing with Civil War II and did maybe the best Civil War II story.
Yep.
How they dealt with fighting with friends, which I think is just a really phenomenal way to approach the story.
Mm-hmm. He managed to do what I think we all wanted, which was get the classic team back together.
Yep.
But instead of feeling like it was some retro thing that was just for the old-timers, it's very modern in its style.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, moving on to best ongoing book. I'm going to call out Miss Marvel.
Yep.
I've loved every issue of this book. It's been relaunched now. And every single issue I love that's got art by Takeshi Miyazawa and Adrian Alfona and whoever else they bring in. I think Tana Ford has maybe done some of that. Might just be Silk. But they've brought in a lot of different artists, and every time it's somebody really good. G. Willow Wilson writes this character exceptionally well that she created. Mm-hmm. And it's such a good mix of sort of what I want out of Teenage Spider-Man and yet filtered through an experience that I've never seen before, that of a Muslim teen girl in Jersey City. They've done a really good job of bringing her from sort of neophyte hero to someone who's sort of central to the young Marvel experience.
Right.
They did a great job in Civil War II of showing how she deals with her idol, Captain Marvel, falling short of those ideals. And they tied that story back into the story of her and her friends. And I really, really love this book. I love its supporting cast. Everything that I loved about, say, Ultimate Spider-Man when it was firing on all cylinders is right there in Miss Marvel. Mm-hmm. Dave, what's your pick?
My pick for best ongoing series is going to be Captain America, Sam Wilson, which we're just talking about the art on it a few minutes ago. This is Nick Spencer writing.
Yep.
Spencer, who prior to that maybe had not been a writer who had like particularly clicked with me. And I don't even have like that strong fondness for the Cap era, the Mark Gruenwald era that this is referencing, but I do have a fondness for that era.
Yeah. You say strong fondness. That might be understating how much I love the era that he's referencing.
Masturbatory obsessiveness.
That's a little further than I'd go.
Is it?
Somewhere on that spectrum.
Is it?
Closer to masturbatory obsessiveness.
Anyway, while I do enjoy seeing like the villains and some of the character callbacks to that go back to 80s stories, you know, like D-Man himself like does not particularly mean a lot to me. But what I really like about the book is its politics.
Yeah.
It wears them on its sleeve. It's very progressive minded and not apologetic about it. And it was an overt decision that Sam Wilson made when he took on the role.
Yep.
And I thought the reasoning behind it was a good one. It didn't trash Steve Rogers for having been sort of apolitical over the years. But he's like, I just don't feel like I can do that. I have to speak up when I have the power.
Yeah.
And it made sense. I've liked what he's done with it. I think it's a voice that needs to be out there right now.
Yeah,
and,
I agree.
And there's traditional strong craftsmanship to the stories. There is sometimes a challenge to liberal hypocrisy too, and also to just the difficult balancing point I thought they did some particularly good stuff that was clearly a reflection of Black Lives Matter.
Yep.
Where they had these and also all the young African American men who've been getting killed by police.
Yep.
The AmeriCops?
The AmeriCops, which is a Gruenwald thing.
Yep. And then they put Sam Wilson somewhere between them and a character from the 90s who was kind of a schlocky, angry black man character, literally named Rage.
Yep.
But who's clearly the voice of opposition, but like the kind of ones where like, oh, I don't know if I want you on my team. You're gonna like the essentially here he is reflecting sort of the Black Lives Matter protesters who have on occasion turned violent and opposition has used to try and tar the whole movement.
Right.
Anyway, that's just one example of the storyline in there. Of course, I like all the characters in it too. I like his interaction with Misty Knight and his new backup team.
Yep. The new Falcon. The other thing I like about this...
I like D-Man.
This is very much a continuation. Mark Gruenwald did the same thing where he would do liberal politics but filter through superhero sensibility.
Right.
And you never forget this is a superhero book. Like, it is very much all about...
Oh, yeah.
He does a very, fun, like, the hashtag Take Back the Shield. He brings in U.S. Agent. Like, this is very much... It is a political book.
The Sons of the Serpent are, formerly overtly racist group. Reinvented, in a sort of less racist way, but they have like laser guns and stuff.
They're alt snake.
Yes.
But I love that it is a political book, but at the same time, it is overtly a superhero book.
Right.
Which is why it's my cheater pick. I'm just going to throw that out there right now. Nick, what is your picks?
My pick is Jason Aaron's Doctor Strange.
Yeah, it's a great book.
It's just been a lot of fun. It started last year, but...
A little Doctor Strange book that could.
I think there were only like two or three issues last year, and then it sort of... just continued to gain steam. There were some great moments.
The big empirical story
and then
about...
they did the empirical about destroying magic. And that sort of sealed the deal because it changes Doctor Strange in an interesting way.
Yeah, I agree.
And it just gives him a hurdle to kind of cross as opposed to being able to do whatever he wanted whenever he wanted.
Yeah.
Now he's a little bit lower on the magic totem pole, but... He's still the master. I mean, he's still the guy you go to if you've got a problem.
It's interesting because if someone comes on Superman and does a story where he gets depowered,
you'd
be like, oh, you're a big cheater writer and this is probably terrible. But it works with Doctor Strange.
It works.
Yeah.
And I also think, like, magic is sometimes even seems to be beyond Superman in the sense that it feels like the writer, if they want, could have the character do anything.
Literally anything,
So they reined that in.
He also did unique ideas for the Sanctum Sanctorum.
Yep.
Gave him a new counterpart along with Wong as sort of the librarian. I forget her name.
Yep.
Irma?
No. I don't remember her name.
But she's a lot of fun. And then, of course, when they did the Empirical story, they brought in, like, Shaman and Scarlet Witch and so many other different characters. She even made up a couple of characters.
Yeah.
And the art has been just beautiful. Chris Piccolo's done some great stuff in there. And I don't know, it's just been a lot of fun.
All right. What's your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is I Hate Fairyland for all the reasons that
you already said.
I said
see also previous answer.
Art, but his stories of this young girl who gets trapped in kind of a fairyland as a 12-year-old and has been stuck there, and she's like a 35-year-old.
The 12-year-old's body.
In a 12-year-old body, and she's just insane. It just comes about in just crazy, insane ways, and it's hilarious. I never fail to laugh out loud.
You know, Nick, I think this is a reflection of your fondness for movies that have, like, the dysfunctional family thing dynamic going on.
Dave, what's your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is Faith from Valiant, which I've talked about a million times, but... she's sort of a 20-something geeky superhero, happens to be a plus-sized gal, working for sort of a BuzzFeed site. That's like her Clark Kent job. And making her way through, you know, discovering supervillains and stuff like that, even as she tends to kind of geek out over being who she is. You know, just in that position, it's like a fan who got to be a superhero in some ways.
Right.
They did an amazing story where she solves, you know, gets into a mystery at a Comic-Con.
Yep.
There's a fun link to the rest of the Valiant universe in the sense that she's dating Archer from Archer and Armstrong.
Yep.
And I just like the character. She's kind of mostly giddily upbeat, but she's got some Peter Parker to her as well, where she's like, she's struggling sometimes to find herself. And so it's like, it's sort of the younger days of Peter Parker. And there's good superhero action in it too. So I just feel like, you know, in the same way that I think Miss Marvel is one of the strong new superhero voices. I think this is another sort of alternative, not a teen book like that one is, but still,
is it like a more millennial 20-something book? Actually?
Yeah, there you go, like a good millennial superhero.
And my cheater pick, as previously mentioned, is Captain America, Sam Wilson.
Yes,
and that's going to wrap it up for us this week. I will post as much as I have for us on the site, and like I say, if you're really interested in going deep on 2016, I will have my full up posts on my blog close to the end of the year.
Like the Terminator, you have detailed files.
I have detailed files. And until next time,
Yo, Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.